On Monday, the World Health Organization made a momentous announcement.
Also breaking, a new report out this morning raising a red flag about some of the most popular foods on your breakfast plate.
Red meat, the most delicious meat perhaps there is. Could it cause cancer? The World Health Organization thinks so.
Agency saying processed meats should be considered carcinogens as dangerous, they say, as smoking, arsenic, and asbestos.
Essentially, the WHO classified high consumption of processed meats, like bacon and sausage, as a Class 1 or Class A risk factor for colorectal cancer. Ivan Oransky is a distinguished writer in residence at New York University's Arthur Carter Journalism Institute and co-founder of Retraction Watch. He says that the WHO has kind of put an old story in a new bottle.
So there are a number of studies that have been coming out over the years. There's nothing actually new here. What the WHO has done is say that processed meat is in group one. Group one means, yes, it causes cancer, but it doesn't tell you how much cancer it causes.
Okay. We looked at the information and found that if you did a meta-analysis of the studies, people who ate the most bacon had an 18% increased risk of developing colorectal cancer. That sounds like a lot.
It's actually 17%, but that's basically the same thing. What that is a relative risk. It doesn't actually tell you how many people will or won't die. It just means that it's 17% more likely. Well, you have to know more likely than what. What I find the more useful statistic here is if you look at, and this is from Cancer Research UK, they've actually put out what I think is a very helpful document on this. You take 1,000 people in the UK. What you'll find is that about 60, 61 of them, they say, will develop colon cancer over the course of their lives. Okay. Now, if you sort of break that down a little bit by if you're a pretty heavy processed meat eater, you'll end up with, say, 66 cases. So 5 more out of 1,000.
So we're talking about maybe a half a dozen more cases in 1,000 for eating a lot. But I couldn't find out what a lot meant.
So they did that too. These are the Brits, so they've got their English breakfasts. I'm sure you've had some of those.
I think I carry them with me.
So they're saying, let's keep it to about, give or take, about 2.5 ounces. What they're saying is that somebody might eat 4 times that. You know, a typical English breakfast with bacon and sausages and ham sandwich for lunch. They have spaghetti bolognese here for dinner.
So somebody who eats maybe 6 ounces of processed meat a day would be in the upper category.
Yeah, maybe closer to 10.
Let's talk about the media coverage of the study.
You know, with all due respect to those who would write clickbait headlines like bacon is as bad as cigarettes, that's not true. On the other hand, the WHO and many public health organizations have not always been terribly good at expressing risk. And I would argue that simply coming out and saying, as they did today, that this is in the same class as cigarettes, actually, it's a pretty predictable outcome to have terrible headlines. What tends to happen in the media is, you know, we look for quick answers. I mean, we all want quick answers for everything. And so we're complicit here. And if you go to a website called Kill or Cure, what the folks behind Kill or Cure have done is catalog every single attempt by the Daily Mail, the most read newspaper website in the world.
It once had cancer comes from your pen top.
Well, that's probably on there. But the point is that the world is not binary. And it's funny, we're talking about processed meat because one of the things that happens in science is you end up with these salami-sliced data sets. The whole salami should be a study, but instead people need to publish. And so they come up with something that, you know, is just what's referred to as the least publishable unit. What you end up with is a study about whether or not people who eat peanuts are healthier if they have liver cancer than those who eat walnuts. And that doesn't really tell you anything. And that's how we end up with these, uh-oh, something's causing cancer.
This reminds me of the kind of single-factor analysis we're always criticizing financial reporting for. You know, the market has tanked. It must be because China devalued the yuan, or the market is up. It must be because Obama gave a speech at the UN. It really doesn't work that way.
It doesn't. Correlation is not causation. The fact that 2 things happened, the fact that 100 things happened at once, doesn't necessarily mean they have anything to do with each other. And yet, with a lot of these studies, it's hard to study nutrition in people. right? Number one, people don't tend to tell you the truth. And number two, you don't know what else they're doing. What I eat one day in front of, you know, somebody who I want to impress as having good eating habits and what I eat maybe in the privacy of my home are totally different things.
Lock yourself in the bathroom with a box of Cocoa Puffs. let me throw at you the North American Meat Institute's reaction to this. Obviously, they have a dog in this race. It has pointed out that other class one carcinogens include air and sun. Does it have a point?
You know, I hate to have to agree with the North American Meat Association. They clearly have a dog or a cow or a pig in this fight, but they do have a point. The sun is certainly a carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, air, I haven't looked at their statement, but I assume they're talking about pollution. Calling that air is probably a little bit,
misdirection there. But fundamentally, we all know that bacon is bad for you. It has huge amounts of saturated animal fat. I mean, this stuff's bad for you.
If you were looking for an excuse not to eat bacon, I don't think we needed this evidence to suddenly push us over.
Then what should we take away from this study?
If you are someone who is at relatively high risk of colon cancer, and there are ways to tell that, you should pay a lot of attention to this. If you are someone who has a lot of heart disease, should you be eating a lot of bacon anyway? I think it really depends, and this is the problem with one-size-fits-all nutrition information and advice. What's good for one person may not be very good for somebody else.
Doesn't it adversely affect a public that is constantly battered with these cancer warnings? I mean, is the WHO working at cross purposes here?
I think that's a reasonable question to ask. There's an idea that you just sort of put out information and people understand it. That doesn't work. It's known as the deficit model, and it's been shown not to work. A lot of public health organizations haven't really figured out how to communicate effectively to the public. They do what a lot of journalists do, which is, well, you know, I'm just reporting what it says, and whatever happens afterwards, well, that's just the reader's problem. I don't think we can do that anymore. And to sort of to say that, well, it's in the same category, but didn't you read here on the footnote what I actually meant by that? You might even say it's not completely intellectually honest.
Ivan, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Always good to be here.
Ivan Oransky is the co-founder of Retraction Watch and global editorial director of MedPage Today.
Climate gate, petrol prices, potholes, credit crisis, gypsies, Russell Brand, time we all took a stand, modern art, where to start, trashed a lot of it, apart from statuette, a puppy, 50 quid plus P&P, Muslim women hiding stolen goods behind their veil. It's absolutely true because I read it in the Daily Mail. Poles paid to give blood, immigration like a flood, soft touch, British Isles, cancer from your mobiles, cancer from your laptop, cancer from your root crop, cancer from your shoes, from your dog, from your pen top, immigrants arriving on an unprecedented scale. It's got to be the case if it's written in the Daily Mail. They never mince their words in the good old Daily Mail. It's absolutely true, because I gather all my views from the Daily Mail.
That was Dan and Dan. Sausage is just the latest link in a perpetual feedback loop of, I can't believe I'm saying this, of health and diet stories proclaiming that a favored foodstuff, red wine for instance, will either kill you.
Wine or any alcohol increases the risk of breast cancer.
Or save you.
Ladies, drink your red wine. It could prevent breast cancer.
Or kill you.
I probably told you hundreds of times that red wine is good for your heart. But recent news is raising questions.
Or save you.
It'll help you with good cholesterol.
Right.
It lowers blood pressure, lowers stress, and just has many, many health benefits.
And so for the remainder of this podcast, to help you navigate the dodgy world of health news, we'll re-air our Breaking News Consumer's Handbook Health Edition, which you can find on our website. The first item in the handbook, watch out for single-source stories. They're usually based on press releases.
What makes my skin crawl is when I hold the news release in one hand and the story in the other hand, and the quote is lifted verbatim from the news release without attribution.
Gary Schweitzer, the publisher of healthnewsreview.org, is a dogged exposer of health news shams, scams, and all-round slop.
It makes the news organization look like it independently sought out that work. The reporter really never left his or her desk. You're not living up to your responsibility as a journalist if you do that.
Item number two, beware stories that don't mention cost.
Reuters had a story about an immunotherapy combination promising in a melanoma study. The drug in question costs around $30,000 per injection, and the combined cost, more than $250,000 a year. The story didn't touch on cost at all. How can we be talking about how wonderful a drug is and not talk about costs?
Something else to consider, when a new treatment is said to reduce your risk of disease by, say, 50%, is it a relative 50% or an actual 50%? Stay with me.
Ask yourself, 50% of what? Here's a classic example. When a drug company marketed its drug for osteoporosis.
This was a Merck drug, right?
Yep. They marketed it as reducing the rate of hip fracture by 50%. The data showed it reduced the risk of hip fracture from 2 in 100 in the untreated group to 1 in 100 in the treated group. That is indeed a 50% relative risk reduction, but in the absolute look at how the group benefited, 1 in 100 benefited. It is a 1% absolute risk reduction, and the other 99 had to run the risk of side effects and pay for the drug and stand no chance of benefit.
Item four, if you think it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
If all you hear is predominantly about the benefits, run for the hills, because there are trade-offs in all healthcare interventions.
One way you'll know you're not getting the full picture? The fifth item on our list, beware too many patient testimonials.
You know, there's this old saying, the plural of anecdote is not data. We write a lot about screening tests. Patients saying, I'm glad I had that mammogram. I'm glad I had that PSA blood test for prostate cancer because it saved my life. Something that we can never prove.
Which brings us to item six.
Now, for the first time, there's evidence that a simple screening test can catch lung tumors earlier.
If you ever hear somebody talking about a simple screening test, there is no such thing. Screening test decisions should be among the most complex that we face in all of our healthcare decision making. Some people will say, it's not a screening test decision. It's a decision about what you do after the results of the screening test. To those people, I'd say you have not talked with people who have experienced harms and regrets, as I have and as many people have.
And there are other words you should watch for, words like...
A breakthrough in treating heart disease.
There's a breakthrough in treating blindness.
It's called a medical miracle treatment saving lives.
The miracle treatment some are calling hope in a petri dish.
Plus a treatment that's the first of its kind.
Has approved a first of its kind treatment.
A game changer in the way breast cancer is treated.
A new treatment could be a game changer.
First of all, this isn't a game. Let's stop calling it a game changer. Is this making a difference in people's lives, or is it making a difference in people's pocketbooks first, before all the evidence is in hand? We hear this could become the new standard of care. Anytime you hear it may become, it could become, substitute it may not become.
Item eight, new isn't always better.
There's a phrase in medicine right now that I think we ought to adopt in journalism, and it's called slow medicine. And it's clinicians talking to each other saying, this is getting out of control. Let's slow down. Let's talk with patients. Let's make sure we do a good history before we pull out that prescription pad.
Related to this slow medicine movement, the ninth item in our handbook, beware of disease mongering. That means turning normal conditions like balding into pathologies. And
disease mongering can also apply to treating risk factors for disease as if they were diseases unto themselves. So maybe the classic example is LDL cholesterol? Do we make the public fixate on know your numbers without dwelling on the numbers that really matter, like did this have an impact on the rate of death from heart disease? In disease mongering, we lower the threshold. So we now get more bent out of shape about blood pressures, blood cholesterol levels, blood glucose levels that are lower than what we used to get bent out of shape about 10 or 15 years ago.
Item 10, treatment availability is often a mirage.
The test is still in preclinical trial phases.
The company is hoping for FDA approval by the end of the year.
Take the crystal ball and throw it out the window. Phase one drug trials, they're meant primarily to say, hey, before we go forward, let's make sure it's safe. But you'll see stories about phase one trials that make claims about benefits, as if these things were available at our corner drugstore, and they're not.
And finally, item 11, the distance between mice and men.
Researchers studying mice found that exposure to cell phone radiation during pregnancy affected brain development.
If a study on mice is any indication, the idea of yo-yo dieting may actually be good for you after all.
The leap from mice to men and women. Well, we had these great pictures of Pluto. It's about that much of a leap.
And so concludes our Breaking News Consumer's Handbook, Health News Edition. You can find a one-page printable sheet of this handbook on our website, onthemedia.org, as well as all of our handbooks. There are 10 so far. This has been an On the Media podcast extra. For more OTM, follow us on Twitter at On the Media and subscribe to our newsletter on our website.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.